Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
This is a bit of a melancholy game podcast bonus because Tom Dart is leaving us at The Times. And don't worry, he's leaving us by choice, his own choice. But Tom, I want to take this opportunity to talk to you a little bit about how football has changed, the experience of a fan. I'm assuming before you became a football writer, you were a football fan. Maybe in some ways you still are. And for those who don't know, by the way, Tom is going to be making the leap across the pond. He's moving to Houston in the great state of Texas. But before we get to that, what do you remember, I mean, as a kid growing up about how you watched football and how you experienced football?
So a game on TV was a big event. Generally, you'd see a few games. Living in London, on a Sunday, ITV had a thing called the Big Match, which was not that big one. Southend seemed to be on it quite a lot.
So this wasn't like Super Sunday, where they chose a top flight match. You might get stuck with something from like Southend.
My football experience is very regional. You'd have the London clubs. There'd be the occasional live match on a Sunday afternoon with Brian Moore, the great ITV commentator, or there might be some highlights. But when there was a live match, it was something that you wanted to be there for in front of the TV, because it didn't happen too often. And in tandem with that, in the mid-80s, I was just starting to go to matches with my family.
Who did you go see?
Leyton Orient, Spurs, a bit of West Ham. Probably one of my earliest football memories is 1986, I think Boxing Day, when Spurs played West Ham, standing on the old shelf at White Hart Lane, being kind of basically pushed down to the front by these old men in this teeming mass of people at the terrace, and then separated from my family, from my dad and my uncle, because they pushed me down the front so I could actually even see the game, and then trying to get back to them at half time and being told, sorry Sonny, you know, don't move, you're stuck there, there's no way you can get out, because it was so cramped and so crowded. And this was 1986. Kind of extraordinary memories for me of as a young kid, of just being surrounded by these so many people in one place, so noisy, so kind of dangerous, it seemed, in a way. So
how old were you?
I would have been 8.
I mean, in this sort of health and safety day and age, I find it incredible, like, that an 8-year-old kid could be separated from the adults he's with, and then you get to the front, and what, you didn't start, but were you scared? Did you start crying? And
I don't remember if I started crying. I was kind of terrified, because I just, at halftime, I tried to get back to my dad, who is probably
how would you have any
20,
idea?
20 meters away somewhere at the back, right. And this fan said, sorry son, no way you're getting through here, it was just too crowded. So I just kind of stood there for the second half, and eventually was reunited with my father. So it was actually a very scary experience.
And you couldn't ring him or ask the guy to ring him or anything?
No, I left my mobile phone at home, and
this is a joke, younger listeners. The mobile phones were extremely rare in the mid-1980s. In fact, only the very wealthy had them.
Yeah, so West Ham as well, with terraces there, which amazing, amazingly intense. Chelsea, of course, as well. The Shed, I remember. The Stamford Bridge.
Did you not support a club? Did you just kind of randomly go to all the London clubs?
No, I support Torquay, so because of my family from Devon, so I didn't get to see them very often. I only saw them when they're in London. So in the meantime, when I started to want to go to matches, I'd just kind of pick and mix with my dad from the London clubs. So I saw, you know, a lot of Orient, who are my local club, and it was of course a lot less intense and as an experience, but kind of less scary. But I love that all the same, just for the drinking in the atmosphere of being at a football match, you know, whether it was a big one or a minor one.
Did you do much reading? I mean, maybe not at eight, but sort of when you got older. I mean, today it seems that, you know, a football fan can that there's acres of coverage in the newspapers in this country. There's obviously a whole series of blogs and whatnot on the web. So it seems to me that even sort of a young football fan, say 14, 15, going forward, can actually read a lot about the game. Now, I'm a bit older than you, but I do remember sort of living here in 1990. And with all due respect to the people who were writing and covering football back then, it's basically a huge, giant void compared to Spain or Germany or Italy. What did you read in those days? And please don't say Shoot.
No, I think it was Match.
All right.
No, I tended to read the Evening Standard when my dad brought it home for work. That was and Teletext.
And by the way, back then, young readers, you had to pay for the Evening Standard.
Yeah, and CFAX and Teletext were huge. They were the most up to date ways, apart from the radio, of getting football information. So every day I'd be.
There was no Five Live back then either. No Talk Sport.
No Five Live. No Talk Sport. So it was page 302 on CFAX for the football, and that was updated a few times a day, and you'd get a bit of football news, but. The coverage was nothing like it is now in the papers, except perhaps the tabloids, which I didn't tend to read. Football was not assumed, hadn't been assumed into celebrity culture, so there wasn't as much interest in what players did off the pitch, and they weren't as rich, and they weren't as famous, so there was none of that kind of association now where we see players as much as celebrities as actual footballers, and they're in the news all the time for what they do off the pitch as well as on it. It wasn't like that. It was as I was becoming a teenager, it was just beginning to be like that with the arrival of Sky, which took the Premier League away from terrestrial TV, which meant that I couldn't watch it because we didn't have Sky. So that kind of focused my attentions more on the lower leagues in a way, because they were still more readily accessible to me.
And so did you start following, lower league football more closely?
Yeah, I used to, when I was old enough, I used to start going to Orient every couple of weeks with my friends, and it was, under 16s and student discount, it was £3.50 to stand at Orient in the 90s, and it was great because you could stand virtually, you know, just you were a couple of meters away from the pitch and the dugouts, and you could interact a bit with the players. If you shouted something, they would hear you, and none of the standing brought its own culture, which has largely disappeared now. Kind of, you could move around easily enough. You didn't have to sit in a set seat, and it was kind of shabby compared to what it is today. And the facilities were, of course, terrible, but we didn't know any better, so we loved it. And I just kind of became engrossed and obsessed with the culture of going to matches and being inside a stadium, being with so many strangers. Was a phenomenal experience for me. At the same time, at school, as I was playing the game in the playground and in school matches very regularly, so I was experiencing fan culture and also experiencing the love of just playing football.
Did you when you were shouting at the Leighton Orient players and stuff, did you ever shout or get a reaction from anybody who might then have become famous or some of us might have heard of?
I don't remember shouting at anyone.
Did you see anybody up close who then became
well, actually, weirdly, one of my best memories at Orient was when they beat Wales in a friendly.
Wait, the Wales as in like the national
the actual
team?
National Wales team were beaten by Leighton Orient. I think this must have been late 90s, mid 90s.
Please don't tell me Neville Southall was playing in goal, because that would really disappoint me.
I don't remember. I'm pretty certain Giggs played.
Okay, can I just say something? If you out there have any memory of this, because I suspect Tom Dart is just inventing this, okay? But if you've got a memory of Giggs stepping out against Leighton Orient for Wales and being beaten by the O's, please email us at gamepodcast@timesonline.co.uk or hit me up on Twitter at Marcotti, because I find this absolutely fascinating. Now, Tom, you're moving, of course. You're moving to Houston, and I probably guess my accent. I was educated over there, and I spent not in Houston, but in the United States. But and I spent some time there. And how are you going to follow the football from there? I mean, I'm assuming you're not going to convert entirely over to the single biggest sport in Texas, which of course is high school football or UT. Really, the two religions down there. But are you? I mean, have you already sussed out how it's done? I mean, what do you imagine it's going to be like?
I've had a few experiences of going to MLS games in the past, and I've covered a lot of baseball for the Times, so I know what the kind of the media sporting landscape is out there, and it's a lot friendlier. There's not as much distance between the players and the journalists, and you know, within 15 to 20 minutes after a game, you get invited into the dressing room and you can interview who you like. So there's a much more mature, trusting relationship between players and journalists, which sadly is broken down here over the years, whether because of there's negative headlines and dramatic tabloid headlines and stories which players haven't liked, or whether it's in teams' interests as they try to push their own websites and their own media interests. So I'm hoping that in the States it'll be a more positive atmosphere in terms of getting access to the players, and it will be kind of the rule and not the exception to talk to who you want when you want after a game. And of course MLS is still a very much a minority sport, even though it's growing. So I guess unlike the Premier League, they'll be more willing to help out. I think the standard of the MLS, you would know better than me, is not as bad as some people say. I would say it's probably equivalent to the Championship and getting better, and now these teams have got their own stadiums, it's easier to take the MLS a lot more seriously. It'll also be easy for me to follow the Premier League thanks to the internet and satellite TV.
A lot of early starts on the weekend.
Yeah.
A lot of drinking in bars at 7 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday morning, I know.
It's going to be strange, yeah.
That's an experience I've been there. Well, I mean, on behalf of, obviously, all of us who've worked on a game podcast, there's guys who aren't here, like Patty and Hassan and Tony and so on, and, of course, our producer, Chris Skinner, and also Ped Hunter, who helps out a little bit. I just wanted to thank you for sharing some of your memories and, of course, for working with us all these years. And please, don't be a stranger out there.
Yeah, thank you very much. I really appreciate that, and it's been an absolute pleasure.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Romesh Ranganathan, and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts, and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.